Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show, back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, hey, they're great, Lonzo, and you. The Friday edition of the show underway. Football was on TV last night. And yes, Chris Collinsworth, the games do matter. The scores don't matter. And I think that was the point he was trying to make when he said, this game doesn't matter. These games don't matter. I think the point he was trying to make was to the Lions fans of like, yeah, you lost by mucho points. But
how old do you think Collinsworth is now? I'm going to look it up. I'm just
Collinsworth is 60, sure. Let's say 3. I'm going to guess 63.
I think he's older than that. But
I am going to say, Chris Collinsworth, that the game's scores don't matter. The games do. I'd be willing to bet.
He's 66 years old.
Okay. I mean, he's doing great. Looks great. And I do not have the dislike of Chris Collinsworth that many people share. Like, he's not bad to me. Do I put him on the Hall of Fame, on the Mount Rushmore of color guys? No, not really. And I think sometimes he can get a little too, I don't know, casual, I guess, for me.
I think I've consistently disliked him since he was a player. So it's not like I suddenly went, you know what? I don't like him because it's popular to not like him. I've just never liked him. So.
That's fair. Lonzo's a hating Chris Collinsworth hipster. I don't hate the guy. I don't dislike the guy. Like he's not in my, you know, in my color comment or Hall of Fame, but he's fine. He's whatever. He said last night towards the end of that game in the fourth quarter, Lions down by a lot. They commit their fifth turnover of the night, a pick in the fourth. And he's like, and I know Lions fans are going to look at the scoreboard and be disappointed, but these games don't matter. And I'm like, the scores don't matter. The scores don't matter. The games very much matter. There were some dudes last night. Because I was also shocked, although they're not wrong about it, I was shocked how many times during the game that Tirico and Collinsworth both said, you know, most of these guys are never going to play in another game. Most of these guys are going to lose their job. And they were just like, hey, just passing on it. And I guess, like, you're right. You're right. But also,
we've said the same thing. I mean, why is it okay for us to say it, but not for them?
I have said it as an argument for why preseason games both A, matter, and B are awesome. Like it's those guys playing in the fourth quarter. No, they're not the best football players in the world, but they are guys. They're fighting for their career. Like the dudes who are playing in the fourth when they're trying to make a roster are busting it. And Collinsworth and Tirico were almost saying it like it was a reason to just turn the game off and get to bed. I felt like honestly there was a point in the fourth quarter between Collinsworth saying the game doesn't matter, and again I think he meant the score doesn't matter, but what he said was the game doesn't matter. And Tirico pointing out that, you know, most of the guys out there, they're not going to be on rosters. I honestly thought to myself at one point, you guys are making a great argument for me to turn you off and go to bed. You guys are making a wonderful argument for me to hit the power button and take it to the sack and call it a night. I don't want to. I want to finish the game. And I did because I don't care about my own health or well-being. But it sounded like they were making an argument as to why I should not watch anymore. Well, I was just kind of taken aback by that.
These, especially the early preseason games, because there's only 3 now, mean so much more than they used to. Used to be, I believe, the third one was the dress rehearsal for the Stars, and the fourth one was it, your last chance to make a team. Well, now you have only technically like 2 games to make a team. And those guys last night, even into the fourth quarter, were playing pretty hard.
Yeah, and the guys that are playing in the fourth quarter, those are the guys that are the 7th DB on the chart. Those are the guys that are proven that they should make it because they can hustle, because they'll grind, because they're going to be the hardest workers, hardest hitters. They can be special teams aces, whatever. And to me, that makes it more interesting, not less. I guess that was kind of the thing that was the most compelling to me, that I was just a little taken aback that Collinsworth and Tirico were making it sound like, all right, guys, fourth quarter, y'all can head on to bed. We'll see you next week for the next preseason game that doesn't matter. I don't know. It felt weird. I don't see why.
So would you rather have a younger crew in there who would be more energetic and say less things like that?
I don't think they were hurting for energy. I thought they sounded fine. Honestly, I thought the broadcast top to bottom was pretty good overall for a preseason game. It wasn't like the sound or the gas or the energy or any of that. It just, to me, felt like it almost like came across, sounded like two guys that were upbeat and sounded like they had their Red Bull before the game, but also like they couldn't really be bothered. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And I just, I don't know. I just, the takeaway for me was, it felt like if the wife did want to watch that game with me last night, and had I convinced her to stay up and watch the game and I was all excited about it, it sounds like in the fourth quarter, based on Tirico and Collinsworth, they would have talked to her into being like, all right, babe, I'm going to bed.
Does she really listen to the announcers? How much does anyone really listen to the announcers? Although you're more of a what is that, 32 cam or whatever, where they're...
Oh, yeah, Sky Cam.
Yeah.
Big fan of Sky Cam. I want more Sky Cam. Every game should offer a Sky Cam. Just every game. Game film. Madden style. I want to see the field. Like, I actually had that thought last night at one point. Trey Lance is out there, again, getting a lot of commentary. Yes, he's playing against the Lions backups and backups, but Trey Lance looked good. And the story of Trey Lance could be interesting because he goes to San Francisco, but they got their guy, so no point. They trade him to Dallas. They got their guy. He gets a shot. It doesn't go great. But now he's at a place where it's like, yeah, you're the backup, but you're also the backup for a guy that, whether you agree or not, the aura around Harbaugh is that he understands how to work an offense around a quarterback. And I think the evidence was Michigan's national championship when J.J. McCarthy was in charge, who did not appear to be a great college quarterback, but the offense worked around him. So the story of Lance is compelling. But I, to have a better purview of whether that is going to work out or not, I want to see what he sees on the field. So when the snap is taken and the camera zooms in on just the O-line, D-line, and Trey Lance, and I can't see the rest of the field, I don't know what he's seeing, and therefore I, as a football dude, I don't know what decisions he's making as he's making them, which the point of a preseason is evaluation, and for me, even as a fan, I still want to evaluate as I'm watching. In case I got to call Jim and be like, hey, man, Trey's not your guy.
There you go. It's not an unusual story because we've seen Baker Mayfield do the same thing. I mean, not work out on one team, not work out on another team, and then he lands at a team where he's doing really well. Could the same thing happen for Trey Lance?
That's the question. Yeah. But again, for me, because I would, if I could see all 22 on the field last night, I'd have a better analysis of what was actually happening instead of just watching, you know, kind of one receiver on the replay. I think I'd get a better vibe. Same thing true for when DJ Uiagalelei checked into the game. Part of the question mark about him.
I didn't know he was on the team until they said his name. I was like, what? Oh, okay.
Well, I remember getting him picked up. We talked about it very briefly, but it was kind of like a, okay, good luck. You know what I mean? Like, I'm curious because I also think, and I said this to a friend last night, I'm like, you want to know what the funniest possible NFL headline is for 2025? DJ Uiagalelei takes somebody's job and becomes a stud in the NFL. And heads in Clemson, Corvallis, and Tallahassee all simultaneously explode like that scene from Scanners.
More so in Clemson and those fans who wanted him gone and be like, see, man, I knew we had to. Why'd he leave? He should have stayed here. You know those guys will do that.
Yeah. So
they all have like Clemson Bob, Clemson Joe, Clemson Jerry.
I would rather be able to see the whole football field and have a genuine ability to see what they see and respond to it. All right, it's 7:10 in the morning. That means it's time to run through the three most important sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and talk sports this AM, because when you do, you got to know what's going on in sports. And that is why every morning at some point after 7 o'clock, Lonzo and I do this. is the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office this AM and start talking sports. When you do, this is what you will be talking about. Item number one. Don't need to spend a ton of time on it because we have and we will spend more later on, but I got to think the first football game of the 2025-26 football season is worth spending some time on, so let's do that. The NFL's Hall of Fame game went down last night. Score doesn't matter, but if you want it, Chargers 34, Lions 7. Some of the bigger headlines last night, Trey Lance in the game, the former third overall selection of the 49ers, who was traded to Dallas and then sent to the Chargers. Looked pretty good, 13 of 20, 120 yards and a touchdown. DJ Uiagalelei, former Clemson Tiger turned Oregon State Beaver turned Florida State Seminole, checked in late for the Chargers, went 2 of 3 for 25 yards and did lead a touchdown drive at the end of the game. Kyle Allen trying to make the team for Detroit may have opened the door for Tennessee Volunteer, former Tennessee Volunteer, Hendon Hooker. Allen went 9 of 14 for 91 yards, no tutties, and a pair of picks. Hooker checked in 3 of 6 for 18 yards. He also threw a pick, 5 turnovers last night for the Detroit Lions that also included a trio of fumbles. 2 of them were picked up by the Chargers. The other big story from last night, and we will get into this coming up here in just a few minutes on the show, we got our first look at the new first down measurement technology of the NFL. They are instituting the Hawkeye tech to have challenges of first down measurements. We got a look at that last night. I thought it was great. It seems like some of you did, some of you didn't. We are going to talk about that later on in the hour. But before we get there, let's get to item number two. Another discussion we will have later on in the show. The College Sports Commission issued a memo yesterday which said they are loosening its blanket prohibition on athletes receiving payments from NIL collectives. The collectives, an evolving industry built to basically get money from business owners to players funneled through them, will still, according to an article written by Dan Murphy on ESPN, quote, face significantly more scrutiny when trying to sign deals with players than they had in past years, end quote. However, their ability to do so has just gotten a wee bit easier. Now, there are still protocols in place. How those are going to work, I don't know. We will see what the challenges might be to the protocols down the line. But the new rules, as issued in the memo yesterday, say that athletes and collectives will have to show that each deal that they sign will have an athlete promoting a product or service that is being sold to make a profit. Effectively, if you sign an NIL deal through the collective, and I believe this is honestly for even third parties, but I know it is now for sure when you sign through a collective. If you sign an NIL deal with a collective, you have to prove that that deal has the athlete promoting a good and or service that is sold to the public in general and is done so in an effort to turn a profit. One of the things that I think, because I asked the question, who in the hell gets to decide if a NIL deal is of good market value? Well, I'll say this. If there is a business that, let's say, turns $50,000 a year in profit. I know that's a stupid low number, but let me make the argument. If there is a business that, let's say, turns $50,000 a year in profit, and they sign a four-star quarterback to a $1.25 million per year NIL deal, you would look and go, that doesn't make sense. It is going to take you 200 years to recoup that money. And I think that is the goal of this. But how that is going to be legislated against in the future is still, I think, a big time question mark. We'll get to that story a little bit later on in the show as well. But very quickly, let's get to item number three. The MLB trade deadline passed yesterday. We had a flurry of moves at the deadline. We did not, however, necessarily see any particular massive star move teams, which is unsurprising. That was kind of my thought of that as we got closer to the deadline. It became a little bit more obvious to me. I did not think we were going to get a blockbuster deal, but we did have some names moved. Merrill Kelly will leave the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's a name I brought up a couple of times this week. He is headed to Texas in return for a handful of prospects. Orioles, former All-Star center fielder Cedric Mullins, who has been responsible for like a handful of the most electric plays in center field across baseball this year. He is on his way to the New York Mets. I actually love this move for the Mets. I don't like the Mets, but I love this move for the Mets. They booster their outfield a little bit, get a pretty good bat and a former All-Star and a guy who was probably a borderline All-Star this year in return for a trio of right-handed pitchers headed to Baltimore. Taj Bradley is headed from Tampa to Minnesota. They had a solid reliever slash closer option. The Rays get a probably future frontline starter in Griffin Jacks. Dustin May, starting righty, leaving the Dodgers, headed to the Red Sox. I thought the Red Sox were going to be a little bit more active at the deadline because I think the AL East is still very winnable for this team. I just don't know that Dustin May is necessarily the guy that I think is the boost they think it is. The Dodgers get a couple of outfield prospects, which is good. They've been obviously hamstrung by injuries, including a couple two outfielders and flex infielders. So, this trade's fine. I don't think either one of these teams got progressively better or worse. Carlos Correa is headed back to Houston. He leaves Minnesota in return for lefty Matt Mikulski. The Astros are going to play him at some combination of third and shortstop. He's been inconsistent. He is 31 years of age, but he was very good at Houston. Maybe he just gets back to the friendly confines and is able to get it back. All-star Ryan O'Hearn and outfielder Ramon Laureano head to San Diego. The Orioles get a flurry of prospectors back in return for an all-star and a pretty good utility outfielder. I actually really like the addition of Ryan Hearn as probably a DH to the San Diego Padres. He was the NL's starting DH in the All-Star game this year. A couple of other moves that got made, not as much in terms of name. Mason Miller and JP Sears are also headed to San Diego in return for some prospects from the Padres. They are headed to the A's. The Padres get Freddie Freeman, the catcher, in return from Kansas City for a couple of prospects. Harrison Bader headed to Philadelphia in return for some prospects. This is it's a good move. Brandon Marsh has been, not Brandon Marsh this year. Johan Rojas has been bad at the plate for the Phillies this year, so they get a center fielder that is a lot more reliable and trustworthy. But Bader's not the same guy that he has been the last couple of years this year. Is this maybe another, again, Chris Sale deal? Will he shows up, changes spots, and he feels, I don't know. We'll find out. Shane Bieber leaves the Guardians. He is headed to Toronto. Love that move for Toronto. And those are the moves that got made yesterday at the trade deadline. We will address and analyze these a little bit later on and keep an eye on how they progress and moves made towards the MLB's postseason when we come back here in just a moment from right now. We talked about Notre Dame and the fact that they do have some power and authority in the college football game, which is why them throwing their weight behind the SEC's expanded playoffs format is not unsurprising, but also impactful. There's a theory floating around right now about Notre Dame that Danny Cannell put out there, and it's gotten a ton of reaction, and I have zero idea why. We'll talk about that next. We'll talk about the Hawkeye tech to round out the hour. That's all coming up on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
Rob Brown loves the radio guy, Rob Brown. Radio guy, Rob Brown, absolutely loves validation, okay? Because
so Rob Brown, the person, does not love validation?
No, he does too. I think, you know what? Let's just call a spade a spade. You say you don't, fellas, but like, I think as dudes, we all love validation. I think validation's a good feeling for all of us. And we don't, like as men, I don't think we get validation as much as we should for like positive mental health. But we won't go down that road just now.
From who? Who do you?
Society at large.
Okay.
Honestly.
Like, if you need me to tell you, hey, great job, Rob, I'll start doing that.
You're certainly welcome to. It's going to make me feel better as a person.
Yesterday was an excellent show, Rob.
I agree with that.
I came away from the show going, that was fun.
Yeah, yesterday was a good show. Today is going to be a good show. So, Rob Brown, the radio guy, does like validation. I like when takes of mine are validated by bigger broadcasters, specifically ones that I like. I like validation sometimes when a bigger talking head than I says something that I go, dude, I what? Like, I know the answer to that. Come on, man. Danny Cannell. Now, I'm just going to say what I feel here with the acknowledgement that down the line repercussions are a possibility. Danny Cannell, former Florida State quarterback, turned ACC talking head. He's on a mission. And the mission that he is on is to figure out how to become the Paul Feinbaum of the ACC. He wants to be the ACC's Paul Feinbaum. And if you follow the social media of Danny Cannell or you listen to Danny Cannell on TV, you will regularly hear him make some respectfully very silly arguments a lot of the time and then go to war over arguments that are largely panned. That's the method that a lot of broadcasters ride to a very successful career. I can't, but Danny Cannell's trying his best. So, not terribly long ago, Danny Cannell had a take. Danny Cannell's take was, quote, Notre Dame has essentially hacked the college football playoffs. They have the easiest schedule. They don't have to play a conference championship game. They most likely get a home playoff game. The kicker, if they make the Natty, they get $20 million all to themselves. For perspective, Ohio State gets $1.1 million. They share the rest with the Big Ten. And now that tweet is from a while ago, but like this year. And I read that, and I'm like, that's not a super hot take, I don't think. Now, I would also like to point out one thing. He said easiest schedule. On their schedule this year, they have a road trip to Miami and a visit from Texas A&M. That's the first 2 weeks of the season. They got to go to Coral Gables, a championship contender. They're back home to Texas A&M, a team that a large number of folks have selected as a dark horse championship contender. Back home for Purdue, then they're on the road at Arkansas. No, I do not think that Arkansas is going to be a particularly good football program this year, but that is a road trip to a very proud, if not disappointed, Southeastern Conference team. They are back home to take on Boise State, a playoff team last year, and a playoff selection this year as the Group of Five representative. Then they play NC State at the house. Again, I don't think NC State's a playoff team, but I think NC State, any given year under Dave Doran, any given year, NC State does feel like one of those teams that like maybe could be a shock team, right? If they hit on a quarterback, and maybe they did this year, we'll find out. Maybe they're a shock team. It's not an easy game. Then they're at home for USC. Again, I think USC under Lincoln Riley has been a massive disappointment. I think most people think under Lincoln Riley, USC has been a massive disappointment. USC also feels like one of those teams that even though they have been a massive disappointment, they still consistently bring in top 10, top 15 recruiting classes. You never know which one of those classes is going to pop and USC's good. Not an easy game. They're on the road to Boston College, back home for their rivalry game against Navy at Pitt versus Syracuse at Stanford. If you think that that is one of the easiest schedules in football. I can go find you a couple of ACC teams that got a blessing from the scheduling gods that worked out pretty well for them. What I will say is Danny Cannell's take on if Notre Dame makes the national championship, they get a huge check that a lot of other teams will not get, and they get to keep all of it. That is accurate. And that is the reason that many are screaming for Notre Dame to join a conference. But just to make the point for the 10 millionth time, it's exactly the reason they won't. It is exactly the reason they won't, because they have over the years, and you know, there's a lot of interesting discussions about how Notre Dame has been capable of doing this, but Notre Dame has built a brand that NBC specifically decided is worth having all to themselves, just that one team. They have built a brand and built a fan base that NBC says, we will give you a television contract for exclusivity for your football games that will pay you the equivalent of what the best teams in the Big Ten and the SEC are getting annually for the conference to have the rights to their games. And oh, by the way, what's that mean for teams like Ohio State, Michigan, Georgia, Alabama? What that means is in the weeks that they play home games against nobodies, they're not on TV. If you want to watch Alabama take on East Carolina, you got to have ESPN Plus or the SEC Network or whatever site that you got to pay a subscription to in order to go find that game. When Notre Dame plays those games at home, you know exactly where it is, and they get that money. Of course they're not going to go anywhere. So unless you can push back on NBC giving them a contract, which, spoiler alert, you can't and they will not, they're not joining your conference, your conference or anybody else's. So you can make the argument that they have hacked the playoffs. They haven't hacked anything, because the Big Ten wanted it because they would get more money, because the SEC wanted it because they would get more money, because those conferences expanded so that they would get more money. Those conferences, by doing what they did, Notre Dame didn't do anything. They just exist. And in order for the Big Ten and the SEC to get more money, in order for the ACC to get more money, Jim Phillips pointed out at ACC Media Days, last year was the most profitable year for the ACC in the history of the conference. In order for them to get more money, they propped up a system which Notre Dame got to look at and go, hell yeah, we get more money too. This is great. This is awesome. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, everybody. I don't know what we're talking about here. Like, what? Why is this a thing that people are jumping on and having a fight over? You created the system so that the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC, the Big 12 could get more money. You created a system to benefit the big dogs, and Notre Dame, over the past couple of decades, created a world in which they got a contract with NBC that says, we'll pay you the same that Ohio State's getting from the Big Ten, but we're also going to guarantee you the added benefit of all your games are readily and easily available nationally. By the way, huge recruiting asset there. What? Like, why? Notre Dame's not the bad guy here. I know everybody wants to cast them as the bad guy. They're not the bad guy. They built the brand. They put in the legwork. They had the foresight to make this happen. And y'all created a world where their brand has the same power behind it as the ACC and the Big 12 do. They've created a world where they get the same TV revenue and more nationally televised games. They're not the bad guy. Those of you that are screaming that Notre Dame should be forced to join a conference, good luck. You're wasting your breath. How are we still talking about this? All right, let's take a break. When we come back, last night the NFL's Hall of Fame game took place in Canton, Ohio. And in that game, there were a couple of big time moments. The biggest time moment to me was the fact that we got our first look at the NFL's use of Hawkeye technology for first down measurements. I thought it was great. I want to make the argument that it was great, because a lot of you don't, when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
At about 10 till 8 last night, as the wife and I sat on the living room couch watching a documentary, because we're old people, she said, after pausing the video and me going, "Why'd you pause the video?" She said, "Hey, it's football time." She said, I figured you wanted to watch at least a little bit of the pregame before kickoff." And I went, "Love you." Went in the back, into the Birdcave, sat in the chair, turned it on, watched a little pregame, and then watched the game, and it was amazing. Not that it was like a particularly amazing game. It was just amazing to have football back on the TV. And there were a few storylines that developed out of that game last night. Trey Lance on his 2025 redemption tour after being selected third overall by the 49ers a few years ago, traded to the Dallas Cowboys and then sent for another ride, this time out to Los Angeles to play for the Chargers. Cool. I mean, could he be a Baker Mayfield? Could he end up with some new scenery turning into a dude? We'll find out. DJ Uiagalelei got onto the field for the LA Chargers last night. I think the funniest possible storyline in 2025 in the NFL would be if DJ Uiagalelei turns into DJ Dude Uiagalelei. I would love to see it, just because the reaction from folks in Clemson, South Carolina, Corvallis, Oregon, and Tallahassee, Florida would be hilarious if this dude turns into a stud. I don't think it's going to, but hey, we'll see. It was game number one. And the third storyline that is the most interesting and impactful for me last night, aside from the fact that, not that this hasn't been happening for a couple of years, I was a grown-ass man when Jared Allen was kicking ass in the NFL, and seeing Jared Allen kind of look like an old dude now, it hurt my feelings. All right, that's not the third most interesting storyline, but it was great to see Jared Allen, but also, like, my hips and knees started hurting a little bit when I saw Jared Allen.
I think, you know, it's great to see Jared Allen, and he looks like he's able to move and things like that. Because a lot of these guys, even though they may not be all that old, if they played hard, you can tell.
Oh, for sure.
And him, he just looked like
a guy.
Yeah.
The third most interesting storyline from the NFL Hall of Fame game last night was that the National Football League rolled out and utilized for the very first time Hawkeye technology for a first down measurement. Now, I will keep it a buck with you. No. Don't you poison the well. I just realized that in the background of that clip, there is a dude loudly screaming not once but twice, "What the hell is that? What the hell is that?" And I love that guy. I do. I love that guy. That might actually be me. If that was taken live at some sort of sporting or performance event, that might have actually been me. So, I will keep it a buck. I don't even really remember what the context of the play that they used it for was. It was a run play. It was close to the first down. Usually in a spot like that, it's preseason for me too. Usually in a spot like that, I would write down time of game, down distance, ball carrier, tackler, the situation. I'm in preseason mode too. I didn't have the tablet of truth ready. I didn't get it done.
They pointed out on the broadcast that they probably didn't need to do it there because it was obviously a first down, but they wanted to show it.
It obviously was not a first down, but yes, you are correct. I do think it was a matter of...
No, it was a first down.
No, didn't he come up short?
No. He was that much over the line.
Yeah, whatever it was.
See?
I don't even remember, honestly.
This proves my point from hour number one, but anyway.
Listen, it's preseason for me too, all right? It's preseason for me as well. So, the The Use went in last night, and keeping it a buck, I loved it. Thought it was great. Thought it was a great. Debut. Now, a lot of people, and you may have picked up on this, Lonzo's in that number. A lot of people, not a fan of what happened last night. I would like to run through the arguments of what happened last night. I would like to run through the memory. That was the first down. You're correct. It was going that way. Here's a couple of thoughts that I have. The first one is, and this is the one that I think is the most easily shot down for me personally. The first one is, oh, it delayed the game. It held up the game. I would like to point out two things. Number one, Major League Baseball implemented in spring ball this year, implemented the automatic balls and strikes system. It is effectively the same technology, but for those of you who maybe didn't watch it or don't remember or whatever, nuts and bolts version. After a ball or strike is called by the umpire behind the plate, either the pitcher, catcher, or batter, and no one else can challenge the ball strike call. They tap their helmet. The umpire calls time. They go up to the box. The box puts the Hawkeye technology into use. It determines ball or strike. They put the replay up on the Jumbotron at the field. The umpire either confirms or changes the call. Everybody gets back to set. We go again. And there were a lot of complaints that that challenge system would delay the game, would slow the game down. It's the same argument that a lot of people used about what happened last night. By the time that Major League Baseball had utilized ABS for just a few spring games right out of the gate, by the time that they had tested it and used it a few times, the average length of an MLB ABS challenge was less than 17 seconds. That is less time than is on the pitch clock. So you have 70 at max. The longest ones, if I recall correctly, the longest challenge was like 22 and a half seconds. So if everyone was as long as the longest challenge last year, you're adding 22 seconds per challenge. If each team, if both teams were to utilize, let's say, because I don't think that we had more than six or seven challenges is in any given game. Let's say both teams challenged seven times. That's 14 challenges timed on, and let's go with the average challenge of 17 seconds. I'll up it to 20. Let's say the average challenge is 20 seconds. You are adding 280 seconds per game. Now, again, bad at math, so I'll use my calculator to make sure I get this number right. That means if you had 14 challenges in a game, which you don't and you won't, but if you had 14 challenges and all of those challenges went 3 full seconds longer than the average, that means you are adding roughly 4 2/3 minutes to a baseball game. If you were sitting down watching a 2.5 to 3 hour baseball game, 6 minutes ain't breaking the audience, people. Baseballs,
Why are you talking about baseball? I thought we were talking about football.
We are. The thing is, the football people against this technology are making the same argument that the baseball fans made against the technology. Oh, it's going to take too long. That challenge last night, from the time that it was made to the time that the ball was spotted and the play clock started again, was about 42, 43 seconds in total. That is, people, effectively adding one game clock to the game. No, I'm not. You can play the whiny baby boo-hoo sounds or the inconceivable clips and all that, which you can't play is wrong because I'm not wrong. No, I'm not. That's your problem. Your problem is I'm not wrong. And the problem is, once again, we have gotten ourselves to a spot where the only argument that you have against it is one of two things. Either A, I don't like how it looks on TV. But again, 42 seconds, and that was the first time. As we use it and as it is put into play, TV dudes and play-by-play dudes are going to start to figure out, here's how we should show it to make it as compelling and drama-filled as we can. And the second argument you have is, I like bad calls better than I like good calls.
Yeah, that's not.
That's
what,
it.
That's not what people say.
It's the
say.
Same as the human
it's,
element
it, it's
game.
Not, it's not
no,
what
it's
people
not what
say.
You say because yeah, you know that yeah. that
Wait,
makes it sound bad.
Rob, are you putting words in my mouth?
No, I am making your argument into what it actually is.
Oh, no. Well, you can't do that because you're not me. Just like you say I can't do it when you say
no,
something.
No, I'm not changing
you. Say
your...
that I just listen. Here's the thing. I don't like it. You're not going to get me to like it. If it becomes a norm, which I don't believe it will, if it does, I just have to deal with it. But for now, I thought last night it was abrupt. The announcers were not ready for it. I think it does need a little more production value. Just because it does, because at least let the crowd noise be on while you're showing it. It just,
well,
if
okay,
I recall,
first
it went
off,
completely
there was,
silent.
There was like 17,000 people there. It's not a big stadium. Like, it's not a small stadium, but it's not a big
point.
Stadium.
If I recall, and I'll have to go back and watch it, the sound cuts out completely. So it goes from, you're hearing the crowd, but you got your ambient mic going in the background, you've got Collinsworth talking, you got all that, then to...
I don't disagree with that. But here is what I will say. I think in response
and they
to that,
act completely surprised by it. At least Collinsworth did.
I think
Tirico
it was.
Was like explaining it. But if they talked over it, I think it wouldn't have been as bad. It was so abrupt. It bothered me.
I won't
and
argue.
And if this happens multiple times during a game, it will be disruptive.
I won't argue that it wasn't jarring. I won't argue that it wasn't jarring. I think it was jarring. I also think that it was not only was it the first time that it happened, and I will tell you, as long as I have been doing this, every now and then, whether it's on the radio or it's calling a game or whatever, every now and then, the first time that I've ever experienced this thing happens to you. And ordinarily, when that happens, it is jarring. So it was the first time it happened. We knew going in that it was going to be tested and utilized in the preseason, but unlike last year when we knew they were going to test and utilize the new kickoff rules in the preseason and we were going to get our first glance at that, you know when the kickoff's coming. There was no indication. One thing I very much would like
so
to
there
see.
So there's no producer that went, Tirico. Collinsworth, stop a second. They're getting ready to use the technology.
No, I think there was because, again, Collinsworth was in the middle of starting a story when that happened. And Tirico kind of, I don't want to say cut him off, but was kind of like, oh, wait, hang on. We've got our first technology measurement challenge here. And as they were setting it up, Tirico, if I recall correctly, Tirico like told Collinsworth, he's like, all right, go ahead with your story. And Collinsworth was like, no, I'm actually more interested in this than whatever I was about to say.
He couldn't remember what he was saying. He was getting ready to talk about the speed of the player, and he completely forgot where he was.
Maybe it was. Whatever happened, he played it off as, no, I'm actually more interested in the
measurement. I've seen it enough in radio where interruption happens, not on this program because I would never interrupt Rob, and then train of thought is lost, and then you got to try to get back to where he was.
Maybe so. But he did a good job as a broadcaster of playing it off as, no, I'd rather see the measurement, or he just would rather see the measurement. I know I would. So, they cut down to the field. They kind of showed what was going on. They cut to the computer graphic tech thing that showed where the ball was and where the line of game was and yada, yada, yada. They showed all that. And was it theatrical? No. I mean, I guess you could, like, put some fireworks in the back of the graphic or whatever you wanted. Maybe you could put the players, like, shadows of the players so you could see. I don't know what you want to make it more theatric, but
show the actual ball and not a computer simulation of it. I think that's a little jarring when you go away from the actual game to show a video game. And I think that bothers the viewer.
No. Here's the problem, though. Where the ball is what we're gauging. How am I going to show you the actual ball? That's the spot. We don't want to know where the spot is. We want to know where the ball was. I can't show you the ball because that's what we're arguing about, is where the ball is and where it should be. I got to show you where, according to lasers and sciencey stuff, the ball is supposed to be, not where it actually is.
So do we have computers yet that will actually place the ball where it said it is? Because a human hand will have to do that. And how do they do that? Are they looking at the screen, too?
It's just like a replay. The ref's going to have himself a little screen that says, this is where the ball gets spotted.
They have to remember, okay, it was right. Okay, so.
If you can't remember that it goes between the 39 and the 40, not the 40 and the 41, you're not supposed to be refereeing. By the way, Bill Vinovich was the referee. So, yes, I said a few bad words last night at my TV, 100%. Bill, son of a Vinovich.
Is that why so many calls were missed last night? Especially pass interference,
that first touchdown.
He basically tackled the receiver and an interception was thrown.
Constantly.
And then I don't know why he threw an interception. I do.
Constantly.
He had a hold of him.
Constantly. So, with that being said, the argument that it slowed the game down, yeah, anytime you do a thing for the first time, it's going to have some learning curve to it. They're going to figure it out. The referees are going to figure out how to make it faster. The dudes on the sideline running it are going to figure out how to make it faster. And the people in the TV truck are going to figure out how to make it look as good as it can. Number two, it felt jarring. Well, it was because it was. It was the first time. And unlike when we did the kickoff rules, which weren't jarring, because we all know when the kickoff is coming, we don't know when this is coming. We don't know when there's going to be a challenge. It just kind of happens. And all the TV dude can go is, oh, we just got told that it's going to be a challenge. Let's go down to the field and check that out.
What is your motivation for convincing people this is okay?
Because.
Robots? That's what I'm thinking.
My belief is this. If a player carrying the ball earns a first down for his team, they should get it. And if a defensive player is able to stop them from getting a first down, they should get it. The result of the play, what actually happened, should be the result of the play, not what some faulty human eyes think happened. The players should play the game. The only human element I give a damn about is people playing the game. That's it. The result is the result. It's a ball or it's a strike. The ball was across the line or it wasn't. That's it. Like, let's give the players credit for what they earned or failed to earn. There is not a problem with utilizing technology as a tool to make things better. And we have the tech. It's right there. It's been in use for years. Use it. Lonzo's not a robot. I'm interested to hear the human element in this sports flash.
It's going to be difficult with my tired human eyes, but, you know, what can you do?
Tell me your eyes are as good as they were back in the day. Mine aren't.
You don't know. Our first NFL score of the 2025 season is in, with the Chargers knocking off the Lions in the Hall of Fame game 34-7. Former third overall draft pick Trey Lance was a standout, going 13-20 for 120 yards and two touchdowns for the Chargers before being replaced by former Clemson Tiger quarterback DJ Uiagalelei, who went 2 of 3 for 25 yards, finished the game. Chargers defense ended the night with 3 picks and 2 fumble recoveries. Washington Commanders wide receiver Terry McLaurin, who has been requesting an extension from the team for weeks, has now requested a trade. McLaurin has 1 year remaining on a 3-year, $68 million extension signed in 2022. And the Atlanta Braves are quiet at the trade deadline. General manager Alex Anthopoulos said late yesterday that the team had no interest in getting rid of pieces to save money.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.